Hi, and welcome to another episode of Sheep Farm. And tonight we've got, I suppose he's a serial author. It's not about, it's only kind words you're going to get with serial in front of it, isn't it? Serial author. And our Chris is here as well. Have you got your wine ready, Chris?
I've got some wine here, yeah. I'm not going to drink it yet. But I'm going to wait till Nick's got going a little bit.
Yeah. All right, yeah.
So tonight we're talking to Dr. Nick Collerstrom. I'm sure many people know who Nick Collerstrom is. We've followed his work for a long, long time, starting with A Terror on the Tube way back then, and seen him on Rich Planet on many numerous occasions. And we're happy to have him here tonight. But before I start...
Yeah, he's my Terror on the Tube.
before I start, I'm going to address some of the sound issues that we've had. Now, Chris's mic's working perfectly, so don't give me any grief over that. But there is a bit of bubbling on his connectivity. So that's where we'll start. We get a bit of grief, Nick, on sometimes on the audio, although the audio sounds really good tonight, and I'm happy with that.
Good stuff.
So with us tonight is Nick Collerstrom, and he's here to talk about many things, but mainly the new book that he's just brought out, Ukraine, The Just War, which he's got his own opinions on. But, I mean, we tend to align with what he's been saying to us in the sort of prelude to recording. And
And just to say, I've got two of Nick's books, How Britain Started the First Two Wars, so you can see where he's
at. Right,
which is a great book, by the way, Nick. That's a great book.
Yeah.
And then he's written Terror on the Tube, which is a 771, and I've got one of his Palmer County books as well. Where are your books available, Nick? He's running around trying to show his book.
Oh, Amazon. These are all on Amazon. I have some books bound on Amazon, but not these. Just getting from Amazon.
Yeah.
How many books have you written in your career, Nick? And I'm looking down this list here. It's quite a hell of a lot.
I don't know. I wouldn't have to count them.
Imagine not knowing how many books you've written.
I mean, the point is that most of them aren't with real publishers, you know. You just self-publish. About 10 or so, I guess. 10 or 10 or less, yeah. Some of them are very half-baked or not up to match, so that's why I don't really want to count them up, you know. a long time ago.
But we all grow. I know with my research, where I do, you tend to look back at the early stuff and think, oh, I could have put a bit more into it here and a bit more into it there. But that's how you learn, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the last century, say 30, I was more into sort of what you might call metaphysical, alchemical astrology stuff. And so I'm not so keen on that now. But once the book's up on Amazon, you can't take it down, you see.
Yeah.
So it's there forever, you know.
Yeah. Until they ban it.
Yeah.
Right. Until they ban it, yeah.
What changed you from the metaphysical then, Nick?
Well, I think it was the 9/11 event. And then I joined this very dynamic, exciting 9/11 truth group in London. Right. And we'd meet together and rap over what was doing it. Right. And that was all, you know, quite exciting. Right. And then the London bombing event happened, 2005. And they were just the group to get a focus on it and start talking about what had happened. And that's what we did. We started mulling over what had happened.
Yeah.
And that ended up with me getting thrown out of my college, you know.
Which college? What,
in this democracy? In the democracy we live in?
Well, UCL, they don't really like this kind of subversive stuff. I found that my book on the London bombings wasn't well received. But... I think all I'd done all I had to do in academia. There's nothing else for me to do there.
Which college was you at, Nick? Sorry.
I was at UCL.
Right.
And I did a load of papers, quite fun and interesting. They keep coming up on academia.edu, a lot about the moon and history of science, a bit of maths and stuff. They're all quite, I'm pleased with them all. But anyway, that's what I did at college. It was, you know, interesting as far as it went, but I feel what people consider important these days, what is important, tends to be outside academe, you know, they don't allow you to talk about important stuff. It's a very strange situation, isn't it? So, as far as most people are concerned, my life began once I was chucked out of the college, 2008, I got more into what people call conspiracy type stuff.
I just call it research. You research on wherever the chips
research,
fall
yeah.
at that particular moment in time. That's where it is. And when you zone in on a particular area and you pull out loads of information, you can't lie with that information. That's just there, isn't it? They're not trying to concoct a story like you did with the 7-7 stuff. You just got all the available information, and that's
Well, I suffered a lot from that. I became very heavily vilified and ethically damned, scoffed at by papers, and I just about managed to hang on to it. It was like a snake twisting and turning, that story, and I hung on to it over the years, and as a result of that, I could write the book of you know, the massive attempt at government deceptions that went on in the aftermath of that event. I mean, still don't know exactly who did it, but... you can say deep government complicity, BBC complicity, Metropolitan Police complicity, you know.
Unbelievable, yeah.
And probably other foreign intelligence agencies as well, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of these things that happen, these terrorist events from 9/11 and going all the way back to, say, Gulf of Tonkin, there's all been a prelude to it via there being some sort of simulation. Even on 9/11, there was a simulation happening was it NORAD?
Loads and loads of simulations. You know, the phrase, this is not a drill, became sort of classic, didn't it?
Yeah, we did. 7-7 with the Peter Power thing, wasn't it? Was it Peter?
Yeah, and is this part of the simulation? No, it's not. Yeah. these kind of comments.
Yeah.
As you say, you got Peter Power with 7-7, with... you know, seriously expecting people to believe him that he had drills at exactly the same stations, underground stations,
the same things,
exactly the same time of day. You know, for a certain business,
at that point when he was on the news saying that, he did genuinely look surprised. Do you think he knew?
Things hadn't gone entirely according to plan, and he kind of sensed that if he didn't come out with this now, he would be likely to be exposed later on.
Right.
And I think that was his way of avoiding criminal charges.
Right, by announcing it on TV.
He would realise he was complicit, not knowing quite how far he goes with complicity.
Even the newsreader that was asking him the question was bemused, because he realised that the odds on the coincidence of that happening at exactly the same places, on exactly the same day, at exactly the same time, doing the same thing as what happened, you wouldn't get the odds on that, would you?
No, and he'd also had a history of this kind of thing happening before, hadn't he? Yeah. Of other sort of drills where he just happens to be there at a crucial time. Yeah. So
he looked scared to me, did that Power guy?
He did, yeah.
And Jaguar you drove? A really posh car that might well have turned up at Luton train station. I met the lads who just come down from Leeds, you know.
Right.
You see a posh Jaguar turn up, park right next to their cars. That's quite possible, Peter Power.
And the light of day might have dawned on him that he's been used in this conspiracy. Well,
as soon as the first explosion went off, he'd have known. He'd have been same as those Muslim lads. They've all been crapping themselves, weren't they?
Yeah. I think our group did very well intuiting the way those Muslim lads had arrived too late. I think that's precisely what happened due to the delay in all the train. The perfect crime went wrong because the delay in all the train times. They arrived at King's Cross when all the panic was brewing up.
Because the train was late, wasn't it?
Because the train was late, yeah. And it just twigged on. Hang on. This isn't quite what we've been promised, you know. We thought it was a fun rehearsal. Who was the guy who gave us these rucksacks at Luton train station, told us to take them into London? And we better get the hell out of it there if we can, you know. And that became their thought, which they couldn't, of course.
I mean, they thought they were doing a righteous thing, doing a drill by the looks of it.
They thought it was helping Britain or whoever, getting a bit of money and an exciting adventure up in London. Then it dawned on them too late. Could they escape? And they couldn't, of course. They were doomed. I mean, the police could not announce the whole terrorist story until they'd killed those lads, the three of them.
And the suspicion was that they were shot in Canary Wharf, is that right?
Canary Wharf, yeah.
Because it was on the news that some terrorists had been shot and then it just vanished, didn't it?
Yeah, it's on a lot of different news stations, wasn't it? A lot. And there were all sorts of witnesses I got on my website, people saying they heard stories. And it was much more reported in other parts of the world than it was in Britain, where it was hushed up completely.
Right.
So a chap called Moore did, but intuited all that. And I think he's got it absolutely spot on.
Yeah, I watched that. Ripple Effect.
Ripple Effect, yeah.
I used to watch that on YouTube. I bet it's not there anymore.
Oh, right, yeah. So he got that spot on, didn't he?
Yeah.
They did really try. And it's actually quite an easy journey. If the train they've just come off from, all they had to do was get on that very same line again and just change once.
Yeah.
And you end up, that's where you end up, Canary Wharf. So that's all very, I think that's all very credible. And
it was funny because after all that, there was that Brazilian kid who
Menezes,
and he got shot like 12 times in the face.
Yeah,
but it was interesting that because I lived in London. I think I'd left London at that point, but it was interesting people's reaction because of the 7/7 thing. They were saying, but you know, if they were suspicious, they had to take him down. There was no one saying Brie was innocent. That poor guy got shot in the face. People were on side with what the Secret Service did when they shot him, even though it was proved he was innocent. They were still like, well, you know, you've got to because you don't know what could be happening, et cetera. Even though he had no rucksack or anything.
No, absolutely nothing's incriminating, nothing whatsoever that we know of. I mean, the way I see that is that at the 7/7 event, they couldn't show any pictures of terrorists, you see?
Yeah.
Any pictures at all. They got loads and loads of CCTV. Why couldn't they show them?
Yeah.
Well, that is a question, but the fact is they couldn't. And so they wanted a couple of other events show people who could be, quote, terrorists on the underground.
Right.
So the point of the Menezes thing, as I see it, is just that you had a terrorist, alleged terrorist, on the underground.
Right.
And then if you remember, there was another funny story a week or two later called the Chapati Bombers. Where they had rucksacks full of chapati flour and stuff, bit of hydrogen peroxide. It couldn't have gone bang, but they were set out to hang around there and get arrested, and they all got put inside for 30 years.
Oh,
well, that was part of the narrative of kneesing visible alleged terrorists.
Yeah. And that, along with 9/11, that was the beginning of 20 years of terrorists. Anyone could be a terrorist world.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we had...
Now we're in the... Everyone could be a virus world now, or whatever.
Yeah. The meme of terrorism, of Islamic terrorism, it started the year before, of course, in Madrid. You had a Madrid train bombing where loads of people really did get killed and a totally bogus trial of putting Muslims in jail. So that was to give Europeans the story of the Al-Qaeda menace.
Yeah.
Even though these guys in London didn't belong to any Al-Qaeda cell at all. They were totally apolitical, unpolitical.
They were family men from Yorkshire, weren't they?
Family men, yeah. It's not clear what the... they never had any motive or anything, but it was just the Islamic... And that whole Islamic terror scare has gone on solidly until 2017. Mm. We've had a terrific sequence of state-fabricated terror events.
Yeah. Seem to get any CCTV, though, do they? Even though they're in the biggest CCTV nation on the planet. They don't seem to ever... Cameras never seem to be working. I remember that one. Do you remember that one on London Bridge, Dom? And in the September, they turned the cameras off because they were too expensive. Westminster Bridge, sorry.
Yeah.
So you've got Westminster Bridge, where all the politicians are, one of the richest areas in England.
Yeah.
And they can't afford to leave the cameras on there. Motorways and stuff, but they can't...
Primary defining feature of state fabric terror, the CCTV is not working.
He went off in September, and I think that politician or whatever, do you remember the one where... It was a big foo-ha around by Westminster, and I think that happened in like March or May. So it happened literally after, and they turned them off in September before, coincidentally.
The richest place in Britain.
CCTV. Well, that was a terrifically complicated event, wasn't it? With all sorts of staged actors and dummies. Yeah.
I think there was a hero politician who ran up and saved him and all that crap.
There was, hero politician.
Yeah.
I resuscitated him.
That were it.
And I mean, it's a totally daft story, wasn't it? Of a car running along the pavement.
I mean, it's even funny now when you think all that stuff's just forgotten about. It's not even, I mean, I'm sure they'll bring it up again and it'll be, you know, they've got it all.
Well, it's suddenly terminated. 2017, there was that. There was the Manchester Arena one, if you remember.
Yeah.
And Richard D. Hall published an exhaustive inquiry there. Showing that nobody died, right?
Yeah.
And that should have been major media discussion, you know. Nobody mentions it. You know?
Out of all the research I've seen, and I know, we know that people do die in some of these events. We're not there's nobody denying that people die. But out of all of them that I've seen, there's two that stand out to me that really stand out that I thought maybe this is like an Hollywood set. And that was the Boston one. And the Manchester one. They're the only two that I can honestly hand on heart say that it looks like possibly no one died there.
Right,
Everyone, I can't definitely say that somebody did it, because it doesn't really matter to these people whether people die or not, really, does it?
I suppose it's just easier if people don't.
It's easier if people don't. You don't have any parents pursuing you for the rest of your life.
That's right, yeah.
And you don't have to go in real big lawsuits or inquests if you haven't got any dead bodies.
And let's face it, it's not that difficult to, although from the outside to the general public, it looks like it'd be really difficult to make one of these events and keep it all quiet, compartmentalized. But in reality, when you're involved in that and it's all split into different little sections, nobody really knows what's going on. And once people are paid off and they've signed that Faustian contract, that's it. They're bought for life, aren't they?
As you say, Faustian contract, and that's it. You can't go back on it. The omerta, what the mafia used to call the omerta, the dreadful vow, you keep your mouth shut. Yeah.
You've got concrete slippers on, and you're sleeping with the fishes.
All right. As you said, the Boston Marathon bombing. Now, I see that 2012 event as a turning point of introducing actors and dummies. Yeah. My general, fairly simple statement is that before that, you had loads of real deaths, real horror, real pain, and a fake narrative. It's the narrative that's bogus because it casts the blame on an innocent third party, right? Yeah. So the whole beginning of South African terror, you get real deaths, and generally speaking, real deaths, real victims. And then there was that transition. And I would say you got two in America, that and Sandy Hook, where you don't have real deaths. I mean, my mate, colleague Jim Fetzer in America, has been sued some absolutely vast amount, $1 million or something. Because that's what
was his name's in for now, isn't it?
Alex Jones.
Yeah, in that show, Big Show trial.
Yeah, Alex Jones very foolishly backed down from his claim. He should have just hung on to Jim Fetzer's book. Jim Fetzer's book is called Nobody Died at Sandy Hook.
I've read it, actually. I've read it, yeah.
Oh, you have? Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's pretty damn clear.
It's a good book, yeah.
You know, it's a synthetic event, very complicated. The skill is how to stick with the hard facts and not get into emotional issues when some alleged dad says, oh, I lost my poor little daughter. Oh, you're not saying I'm lying, are you? So you keep clear of that emotional issue. I think that is the important skillful issue.
It's very difficult, though, because we sold a menu of terror every day, and we have been since 9/11, really. It's been notched up since the turn of the century.
Yeah.
And so people seem to dine out on this terror. If it's not global climate warming change, it's a stupid virus, or it's not.
Yeah.
It's something else, and a terror event, or.
I think we've got to have the message done that say no to the fear. Don't accept the fear porn. That's such an important phrase that Oli Demogard uses, fear porn.
Yeah.
They're giving you fear porn all the time.
Yeah.
And they want to keep you, so you never have any important thoughts about why you're here or what you're supposed to be doing.
Exactly. Yeah. The real questions.
Nothing spiritual. Just be scared forever.
The real questions. Yeah. Just be scared. Scared of this. Oh no. Wait. You're gonna be scared of that. And now it's Russia. Oh yeah. Be scared of Russia. They give you this fear, and you just gotta say, look, this isn't real. I don't need this.
Yeah.
This is fabricated. In a way, the only thing you need to be scared about is your own government.
Yeah.
And what it's going to do to you.
It's like the last previous 2 years of nonsense, Nick. My only fear was what they're going to do next, not of if something floating around in the sky that's going to attack me and kill me.
No, exactly.
Just what are these nutters going to do next?
Out of all, I know you wrote a book called False Flags Over Europe. What would you say there's the one that stands out that...
He does realise we're not doing video, does he?
No.
Keeps running off to get his books.
Bless him.
Yeah, here we are.
That's False Flags Over Europe.
Right.
So, yeah. Which one would you say stands out? I know you're going to say all of them, but which one?
Well, obviously for me, it's the London bombing.
Right.
Because that's the one I was deeply involved in.
Yeah,
yeah.
Being in London as well, yeah.
But, the important thing is it's a terrific sequence. It went round many countries in Europe, and it always works. No media, no politician is allowed to say, hang on, this is totally fabricated, fixed up, phony, fake event.
Yeah.
Why does it always work? Why can't we have some sort of culture or some political movement that's going to say, look, this is fabricated?
Because I get the feeling a lot of it's slightly controlled, isn't it?
do you think
it's amazing that they can control all that information and hold it all down and no one...
Well, that's sort of what holds the empire together, isn't it? The ability to control this fake news that they give you all the time. Anyway, what is startling about this is that Britain has done far more than any other country.
Yeah.
So there's some power of evil within Britain, or if you like evil, It's militarism and warmongering.
The parasite is in the city of London.
The parasite is in the city of London. Too damn right, yeah.
Yeah.
And it always wants us to accept the next war, whoever it is they want to bomb next. And they create the fear so that you will accede to it and allow your tax money to go to war, which we've got to say no to. We've got to say we don't accept this. That's not my enemy. I say no to this war. And the only thing to be frightened of, terror comes from the government. You know,
sadly, most of the British public are quite happy just going and watching football and saving up and going to Torremolinos for 2 weeks in summer. That is the escape from reality for most people.
Yeah, well, I wonder if the Irish would be more aware of this. I think Irish would be more predisposed to accept that British government does create terror events.
Possibly.
I was sort of hoping there might be some Irish movement to acknowledge this or see what it is.
But when you think about it, I mean, it's a question we always talk about, me and Chris, that it always seems to be that there's only ever a really small proportion of any population that really is questioning everything.
Well, Ireland rolled over the last 2 years, fight, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, Ireland, yeah, ERA rolled over.
Yeah.
Southern Ireland rolled over.
Same as everywhere else did.
Yeah, everywhere else rolled over. And it's roughly 5% of the world's population has stuck two fingers up and said, we're not going along with any of it.
Yeah.
Regardless of what it was.
In America, you've got a large proportion, I believe, the 9/11 story, at least one third. Maybe 40% or maybe even 50%, depending on what you ask them. Now, I wonder if there's some, what proportion would be like for the London bombing? Nobody's ever asked. We never had a survey, have we?
Yeah.
But all you can see is comments that at the bottom of articles, if the paper allows comments, you get a whole lot of massive skeptical, totally skeptical comments, angry skeptical comments. So, I mean, there might be some large proportion that doesn't believe this stuff, and our voice is not heard. I find that the strange thing. There's no politician that will give vent to the... let's take something fairly relatively moderate, like, say, chemtrails, OK?
Yeah.
You've got at least a third of the population believe something very sinister is going on with chemtrails. And if it's that large, why isn't there any politician anywhere that will...
Just a question there.
At least express this, you know?
Yeah.
Sure. Because they don't. They've got no backbone. As we saw in 2020. You wrote a book about the COVID stuff, didn't you, Nick?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Great British COVID hoax.
Yeah.
And
I know we're shifting tact there a little bit, but I thought you'd written a book. I seem to remember you writing a book about it. We'll come to that, actually.
Yeah,
on a quick one, what would you say woke you up, Nick? Because, I mean, you're from a background of studying academia and things like that, And so, and we spoke to he was an associate professor of psychology, Mark Neste. Yeah.
Right.
And obviously when COVID struck, he realised straight on they were using some sort of propaganda against the whole world, if not just Britain. And he's got the same similar sort of qualifications to what communist Susan Mickey's got, who wants to mask us up forever, who's now got a upgrade of a job with the World Health Organization. If you wanted to write this stuff, you couldn't make this stuff up sometimes. But anyway.
Well, I'd recommend everyone, wherever you're living, try and form a group, if you've got a truth group. And that's what we do. I mean, any of these books you've seen I've written, I'm only writing because I'm in part of a group which knocks all these things around. And
right.
I'm just the guy who likes telling a story. I don't think I'm an expert in anything.
Yeah.
But if you have a truth group where people will want to hear each other's views and express comments on what is going on, I think it's a terrifically decisive turning point in world history we're living through now. And I'd urge people, don't sink into despair. And also, don't think you can figure it out by yourself. it's too bewildering. Get a bunch of you together. And if you can, without any booze, give people a cup of tea in the afternoon or whatever. Have some booze afterwards. It's not so good if everyone has their glass of beer. And just go over issues, any issue you want, whatever is bothering you. You know, get a bunch of you together and have a rap about it. That's what we do. We've had a group going for 10 years, 9/11 Keep Talking group, and they keep trying to bust us up, you know. Hate not hope is our enemy. They keep damning us, and we get damned now and then by the Guardian and whatever. But the point is we enjoy, you know, any place we meet at is liable to get a phone call from Hate Not Hope saying, oh, no, do you know who these people are? Well. So we get thrown out, you know. The point is we like being together. We like how we wrap together and we generally find somewhere else to meet. So I would recommend trying to ascertain what is really going on by doing that.
By talking about it.
Yeah, talking about it. That's the way of not getting too pessimistic.
It's funny. It's funny, isn't it? In the last 2 years of the nonsense, the one that they attacked was the pub, wasn't it, where people sit and chat about it. And put the wells to rights.
You know, they attacked that.
Yeah, well, it was shut down. They were shut down. It still made it hard, even when they opened up for you to go into a pub.
Yeah.
And sit in a group of six people and go, what the F just happened for the last 2 years? You know, they still made it difficult. You could only sit in small groups.
Weatherspoons pub did a wonderful job there. That they published stuff saying they were totally skeptical of the COVID thing. And they kept the price of beer down. And, you know, I think they've done a fine job of helping people to meet up and stay together.
Right, yeah. Right. I didn't know Weatherspoons did that.
But as you mentioned, the COVID thing, the question is there some dire apocalypse we're coming to? Is the vax going to do something terrible? You know, people double jabbed. Is something dire going to happen to them? That's the big question, right? I watched the total weekly mortality, Office for National Statistics, and over about the last 5 months, it's been gradually climbing up slowly.
Right.
And now it's about in the region 15-20% above average.
In the summer,
now, in the end of July.
Is it that high?
It's that high. And the question is, will it keep climbing? It's a very slow increment, okay? But it is climbing up.
And it's been ignored as well. I've not seen that in any
mainstream. Ignored. Yeah, well, it's quite easy to find it.
It's probably a subject they don't want to tackle on the BBC because most of these people will have been jabbed, three dart finished. They'll have been. I hear about it a lot. I don't know if you know, Nick. Me and my wife run an alternative health clinic. We get a lot
wonderful.
Of people.
Oh, wonderful! Jolly good.
Yeah.
Well done.
Oh, yeah, cheers. A lot of the people that come in. Are suffering from long COVID. But 100% of them have all been tapped, all of them, double tapped or three dart finished, whatever their choice of the Russian roulette game they want to play. They've all succumb to that. And we hear about full families having, I mean, Chris does as well.
Well, I think we're clearly in a situation now where jab people are getting ill and popping off more than unjabbed. I think you hear about that all the time. I mean, I don't take any notice of how many people have got COVID because I don't think that really means anything.
No.
But I do take notice of, have they been jabbed? I think about, would you agree about 3/4 of the population?
I've had
at least one jab. Is that about it?
I think it's about that, yeah. It is, yeah.
Some people say it's less. Some people say it's
23%. Figures I saw were about 23%.
You can't believe any figures.
Yeah, but I don't believe the figures. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds. I saw another figure slightly higher than that, more like 30%. But I'm happy to accept your figure, 23%. Okay. I think it is in that region.
I'm not saying I'm right there, by the way.
But... yeah. Well, I think that's in that region, and what they don't give you very clearly is of the mortality. Who's been jabbed and who hasn't?
No, they were very happy to tell you who died with COVID in the mortality rates, but they weren't. They're not on doing the other way where they're telling you who's been jabbed.
No, that's the one that really matters.
That's the
thing that really matters.
Yeah.
Of the mortality we're getting now, of the remorselessly increasing mortality, which for the last at least 3 months has been above the average. Maybe four months. How many of those have been jabbed?
I think we know the answer, don't we? It's the majority, isn't it? It's got
to be, and
a large majority as well. I mean, I hear stories, just daft ones like, do you know such and such has had a stroke? Somebody my age, like in the 50 type, early 50s. Yeah. And do you know,
which does happen
it's the rate it's happening at. That's the thing.
I mean, me and Don were just saying, I can't even say I've seen anything for definite myself, but just on a basic personal, just a lot of people have died in the last, you know what I mean? In the last year or so.
Not off COVID.
No, yeah. Even in the news and just in general, just someone else, you know, popped it. Someone's had a stroke
But I mean, your missus at work's telling you about people who are keeling over and people who are getting rushed to hospital. You know, this is what's happening in the work environment. I used to have businesses with 20, 30, 40 people in. That never happened in 25 years of having a business. No. Ever.
Is it blood clots and heart failure that does it?
Exactly, yeah. It's that type of thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
well, it's going to get worse. There isn't, far as I can tell, there isn't a remedy or cure. I don't know if you feel there is more.
No, there isn't.
There isn't.
And the reason there isn't, there's certain things you can do to mitigate symptoms, but the problem is, whatever is in these live bullets that they're firing into people. Yeah. I do believe that some of them are either duds or it's just the saline. I don't think
they're giving them.
I think that's why people have escaped.
We're only talking short term there. What if the ones who haven't, they've got something else that's long term?
Exactly.
Soft tissue. Now,
what I will say is that going back to what you just said there, Nick, I think that the problem is this stuff attaches itself to obviously your DNA. There's no detoxing from that.
No, there's no.
Can detox the crumb of crap out, but you can't detox from that. And I think Richard showed in one of his shows that amphibian-looking mechanical thing that might be floating around in some of these
also, as well. Misnomer, Dom, is that, I think we said before, is that everyone says it's an experiment. It's not an experiment because someone somewhere knows exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah, they do.
It's a live event.
What it's also looking... is that the effect on birth is stronger, if anything, than the effect on death.
Yes.
The stillbirths are quite suddenly turning up. There's a 9-month delay now. And that might be a bigger effect.
In Scotland, a record high, I do believe.
Was
that? Yeah, I think the sterilisation, which you've got the Planned Parenthood guy at the head of this octopus, Bill Gates, and his father were a Rockefeller guy. And then you've got Johnson who were in charge, and Stanley Johnson worked for John D. Rockefeller III and did a population control study for him. You know, so you've got people in control of all these things that when you put two and two together, it equals population decline.
Yeah, so would you agree, Dom, that we, the pure bloods, are...
I don't know about that, but yeah.
Yeah, we are. We're the yeah. pure bloods. That's what we're going to... And we're the future. And anyone out there young enough, just breed if you can, you know, breed.
Yeah.
you know, we're the future. We can breed and you have healthy kids.
Yeah. That's the truth. But I think some of these jabs as well, maybe some people who got scot-free from symptoms, I think there could be a sting in the tail somewhere for some, because there could be delayed reactions. And also, we don't really know what these jabs are, if they are connectivity to technology.
We don't. Yeah. No. There's a whole weird unknown going on here of the graphene and stuff. It's just hard to tell what to believe, isn't it?
Well, I tell you what I see and hear about, because health's been an interest of mine anyway, but even before all this nonsense started.
Right.
And so for the last 10 or 15 years, the figures that you look at there, I were looking at them in a morbid way 5-10 years ago, just to see what was happening at the ONI, at Office of National Statistics and stuff like that, sorry. But health is on a decline anyway. So over the last 50 years, they've destroyed people's health, I'd say, well, probably definitely since the Second World War, to this point where they can now open up your genetic faults and then jab you with something that 5 years' time will kill you, and you won't even link the two, and your family won't.
Right. Well, I feel that if we could get any collection of data from kids who have not been injected with anything, a group of kids, normal healthy kids, whose mothers or parents said no to any jab at all, and are they going to be stronger, healthier, fitter, and with more willpower than other kids? I suspect they are. I mean, I only know one mother who's done that.
Well, Nick, I've got a 4-year-old, and she hasn't had anything.
Right.
And she's as well. I don't want to...
Well done, yeah. Thank you. Jolly good, you. Yeah, right.
Dom as well.
Yeah, well done, Dom.
Very good.
But I mean, you're going to say this because it's your child, aren't you? But I do look at other kids, and they are a bit sicker than her, definitely. She's really, really sick.
One good visual for me and my youngest was that I was watching, for some reason, they came down here, and I'm watching something on the screen, and the tower's going down. Don't know why I'm watching it. It was about 5 years ago.
Right.
And he looked at it and said, they don't even look like real planes. I'd never mentioned 9/11 to him. He just saw the plane going into the building and said, that doesn't look like a real plane.
No, right.
So through his naive eyes and his honesty, a grown-up would not have said that, because they'd have held it in.
Right.
And I put that down to no jabs, that visualisation.
Right. Well, I'm not saying I'm right, but... My suggestion would be, if you've got some sort of health clinic or centre, if you could just log in any kids you get to hear about whose parents have said no, so they haven't been jabbed with anything, a database.
How can you do that survey?
Even if fairly small, just to have that.
Nick, funny we're talking about this, because I literally got a letter through the post this morning saying your child is behind on the immunisations.
They're not behind.
The rise. Well, yes, not behind. We've had numerous letters, but it's funny, I got one today, and it said, and with the rise of them finding polio in the sewers of London, and the rise of, what were they, dysphoria, was it, Fatty? And measles, yeah. And then it listed all the ailments that you can get from them, which, like Dom said, coincide with what happens if you have the jab for it as well.
Right. Yeah.
They're coming out with all these new or old illnesses that basically mimic side effects.
Yeah, well, they're trying to give you the fear, and possibly putting mums or parents in touch with each other who said no to the jab, you know, that could reassure them.
It's more trauma and pressure that they're putting on the mass population. Moderna, as I like to call them, have just launched a new jab where they've got apparently both strains. So they've got the old branded COVID Divac.
Doesn't it take 10 years?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. COVID in reverse is Divac, Nick. I don't know if you've come across that word. And Divac actually means possession by an evil spirit or something like that. Yeah. So anyway.
Divac.
Divac.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah, the word Divock means possession by an evil spirit. Yeah.
All right.
And also we found out, Nick, that AstraZeneca, if I get this right, AstraZeneca split up means weapons that kill. Was that right?
Yeah. AstraZeneca.
AstraZeneca. Weapons that kill.
Astra is a weapon and Z-Necker. Necker is kill. Yeah. Weapons,
and
weapons they kill.
I think it was a weapon specifically that was a spear as well, if I'm right.
Yeah. It was a spear. It was one of those, like a trident type thing.
No, it was a throwable weapon, I think.
Yes, throwable weapon.
All right. Yeah. Well, I could just perhaps share this with you. In our group, we've had various experts pondering the question of whether the COVID virus exists. Okay. Mm. Is there COVID-19? And that's incredibly difficult to answer. And you get and some people take the view that no viruses exist. Okay. Yeah. Which is very credible. Some people say that the COVID-19 only exists in silico. That means as a computer model.
Yeah.
We had a top expert.
Al-Qaeda style.
Al-Qaeda style. Yeah, right. It's a mock-up thing. If you imagine what it's supposed to exist, it's one single molecule with 33,000 nucleic acids.
Just a minute, Nick. The number 33. That's again, it always pops up, the number 33.
Well, okay, that's how much, 3,000 nucleic acids in a sequence. That's what it's supposed to be, isn't it?
Right, yeah.
The COVID-19, a terrific long sequence. Now, and maybe it's coiled up or coiled around or whatever, and it's not living. So it's not in any, membrane or anything that looks after it. Okay. Right. And people used to say that viruses could be crystallized, just to emphasize that they're not living. Well, I can't personally easily visualize this gigantic molecule, 33,000 nucleic acids, all in a sequence, and still less can I envisage it going into a cell and then duplicating itself. I mean, that is just strike. Yeah. And I mean, who am I? But it strikes me as so fantastic. And people I talk to say this is all a string of assumptions. It's not really proved, you know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, all we ever see is a picture, because they've never seen one under a microscope to start with.
No, so and that picture was standard years before COVID-19 appeared. It was the picture. If you wanted a grant for researching viruses, that sort of picture of a sphere with knobs on was what they used. You know.
Floating around in a load of bits falling off it.
Yeah, there's that one, and there's the Ebola one that they use with like a little noose at the top. And are they living? Well, and I'll come back to the beginning there. What is a virus? Depends what they mean. As we know, their words could be inverted and mean something totally different. A virus could mean bio warfare, something or other, couldn't it? In their language, we don't know what that means.
No. But the thing is, this thing has never been purified.
No.
Nobody's ever claimed to have an isolated sample of COVID-19.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
So if nobody's got an isolated sample, how can they say what it is? You know, that's what you're left wondering. And as far as anyone can tell, this PCR test picks up short little fragments of 20 or so nucleic acids that are drifting around in your...
Do you know who owns the patents for the PCR test? The largest pharmaceutical company in the world, Roche Pharmaceuticals.
Oh, right.
Owned by Hoffman and Roche.
Right.
We're probably a black nobility family.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, they own the patent for it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's very useful for whatever it's supposed to do. But the inventor, Carrie Mullis, invented the duplication process, specifically said it can't be used to identify illnesses.
Yes, he did.
You know, so, and that's an incredibly phony concept. I mean, I gather hospitals are using a 40 times multiplication of PCR.
45 cycles they're using, and that's a totally irrelevant measurement, because it's just going to pick everything up. My son's other half, she worked in a testing center because she worked for the council, so they diverted everybody or lose your job and you've got no money to work in testing centers. They were testing cans of Red Bull with the PCR test and they were coming back positive.
Yeah, well, I mean, for anybody who wants to do the maths, it's 2 × 2 × 2 × 2. You just keep doing that. And if you do it about 20 times, you get about 1 million. Do it 30 times, you get about 1 billion. I think 40 times is a trillion. Right. And it's a totally inconceivable multiplication, which it has no reality to it. It's it's left any possible reality way behind. If
their calculations were real, we would have been dropping like flies in the street, wouldn't we? I mean, it was the same. I remember that calculation with the AIDS possible real fake virus in the 80s. Because they had the same diagram with the pyramid where there's a guy at the top, then you get two, then you get four, then you get... Yeah. It just goes down and down and down until everyone's got it.
It's just a way of scaring you.
Yeah, I mean,
illnesses don't work like that. They peak and then they had
John Hurt's voice over it.
John Hurt scares everybody.
He delivered that quite well.
Because he was in 1984.
Well, did you notice the way this new war thing began just as everyone was getting pissed off with the COVID hoax?
Switched the one off one day, that one came on.
January, everyone was beginning to realise that this is an absolute total con. Omicron, they were trying with Omicron.
Omicron.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for God's sake, an anagram of moronic.
Yeah, so Moderna have brought out the old COVID jab mixed with Omicron. So you're safe from both of them now.
Oh, wicked. Where do I get it?
Yeah. Let's queue up. You can get double tapped.
I was saying to Dom the other day that they literally, that week when they were trying to pressure the NHS to have it or get sacked, and within a day or two, they just backtracked and stopped it. And then I don't even know how long it was after, but then the rusty tank war started.
Yeah, it was Savage Jabed, wasn't it?
When he was on TV sweating like a pig because NHS weren't taking up for it. And then within days, he just didn't mention it again. It had gone. That were it. It was over.
Yeah. You couldn't help noticing that the war came along just when everyone was getting fed up with it all.
Yeah.
And just saving their bacon from a whole lot of angry people. Especially with the jab, but why did I take this jab? It's becoming clear just with their own statistics for COVID that jab people were getting COVID more than unjabbed.
Yeah.
But even then, Nick,
even people
who were jabbed, they could have had three dart finish, three jabs, and they get sick, and they still say, "Oh, if I hadn't have had that last one, I'd have probably been even ill, more ill.
I'd have been in hospital."
I don't know the levels of stupidity. I think some of these jabs are lobotomizing people as well.
Well, there might be. Yeah, there's a whole lot of things that might be happening. Maybe in 10 years' time,
we'll be in the zombie apocalypse.
We'll be in the zombie apocalypse. Yeah,
zigzag pieces of wood on his windows.
I mean, going back to the virus thing. I mean, throughout all this, there's been a lot of talk about germ theory. Terrain theory, and I was obviously if your terrain's crap inside, you're going to be more ill. Now the germ theory thing is jumped on by a Rockefeller medicine during the was it the not the FETs I forget the report that they did where they changed the whole medical environment, and it was all about viral infections or bacterial infections, and so. Virus versus terrain was a big argument, and even now it's still a big argument. I always think that these things have been modified in laboratories, and when you're injected with these things, these are growth modified whatever or biological agents. They're not the same. They're not the same thing. They're different, aren't they? So they're a weapon, basically. They're meant to be aimed at something.
Yeah. And, well, whatever they are, don't take them. And it's your health isn't just your diet, but also your state of being, and your positive goal in life, and absence of fear, and hugging your friends. Hug your friends. Mm. Don't stay away from them. Eat natural, healthy foods if you can, and don't worry about any bugs. Forget about bugs. That's what I would say.
Yeah,
I just had a thought then that who knows? Even if you've had the spear, it might just make you be 10% more negative. I mean, that's enough to
turn tip you over the edge.
Do you know? I'm just giving an example. Who knows? You don't.
It might
know,
make
you
watch BBC more. Go on, sorry, Chris.
Well, no, I'm going to say, like, do you think we choose to go next? Sorry, what you say?
Well, that sounds like a terrible fate, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's quite worse than hell. Yeah. Like, maybe that is hell. That's where they sended us. I'm going to say, should we switch to Nick's new book?
We're coming. I was just going to say, we're coming up to roughly an hour, and what I wanted to cover in the second hour was two of your books, actually.
Nick, yeah. Well, I'll just get a quick cup of tea.
Yeah. We're just gonna end this first hour right. off now, and yeah, then we'll let you go and put kettle on.
Right. Yeah.
We don't want you drying up on us.
No. Right.
Christian will be polishing the
two sugars, please, Nick.
Yeah. we're coming to end hour one. Nick's going to go and put kettle on, make him send a brew. I hope it's Yorkshire tea that you're drinking there, Nick.
Well, it might be, yeah. Yorkshire tea, yeah.
Doesn't make any difference, fact. It's all from
it's all the same place.
Anyway, isn't it?
It's all the same place, it doesn't matter. So we'll see you when we come back.